Tell us what happened. If I could, I would, but I just don't believe it.
This is Ozarks at Large. We're going to explain that. Hang on, we'll explain that here in a little bit. With me on the phone is Randy Dixon with the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. Randy, what are we talking about this time?
I would say that's what you would call a teaser in the business, right?
Right. So we're not going to give that away just yet, but what is the overall theme of this visit with archives from the Pryor Center?
Well, you know, Arkansas has had a lot of celebrities visit, but I thought this week we could sort of look at some of the more controversial or notorious type celebrities who have dropped in on our state over the years.
And what I love is you're kind of front-loading this because one of the most famous people in the world, maybe he wasn't as famous yet when he came to Arkansas, but he was on his way. Muhammad Ali visited Arkansas.
Yes. Yes, and he was in legal trouble, big legal trouble. He, you know, had changed his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali. He was a conscientious objector to the Vietnam War. And when he was drafted, he refused and was arrested. And his case went all the way to the Supreme Court.
Stripped of his heavyweight title, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so this interview is when he was speaking out. He was sort of doing the circuit in 1969, speaking against the Vietnam War. But we sat down with him backstage for one of his college speeches, and you know, this was after he had joined the Nation of Islam and had been arrested in 67 and was still tied up in the courts on appeals.
I would say as I come face to face with people, I have many admirers and fans in the black and the white race. Here in Arkansas, Mississippi, Georgia, New York, Florida, I see no difference in the people. I sign as many or more autographs now than I ever have. But I would say that a few boxing officials have did a few things that was not justified, and a few judges in courts, and I would say juries, but it's not the people as a whole. It's just a few in power that I would say runs the structure, but it's not the people.
I wanted to throw in a little more of the interview because he was really facing a felony charge.
Yeah.
He could have done 5 years in prison and $5,000 fine, and he talked about his possibility of going to prison.
So I made my play, I made my move, and I'm willing to pay my debt. I've already paid $10 million in movies, commercials, advertisements. I gave up the world heavyweight crown. Might have to leave my beautiful family, my young wife that I'm just married to for 5 years. So I don't think nobody can criticize me. I haven't burnt no statues of the president. I haven't burnt my own draft card. I'm just doing everything legal in the courts. And then if I lose, I'm going to be a man and not go to Cuba, not leave the country. But I'm going right on to do my time if they find me guilty.
And Muhammad Ali remains a household name. I don't know about Dr. Benjamin Spock. At one point, he was world famous. Maybe that's faded a bit now. But he had a deep Arkansas connection. He lived in the state for a while.
Well, yes, he did. He lived on Beaver Lake.
Yeah.
Was quite a rowing fanatic, wasn't he?
That I didn't know, but I did know that he lived, near Rogers. And this was post his big fame. He had written the book that catapulted him to world fame.
Yes, the common sense book of baby and child care that everyone of my generation was raised on.
And if you've ever seen the movie Raising Arizona, it plays a part in that as well.
Oh, it sure does. They saved the book,
yes,
don't they?
Right.
Yeah, from the flames.
Yes.
But yeah, it sold more than 50 million copies in 42 languages.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it was the Bible for parents of my generation, of the baby boomer parents.
Right.
But he was quite outspoken. Anti-Vietnam War. And this was actually the year before he moved to Arkansas, but he was speaking at the University of Arkansas in 75 about the war.
The immoral part is that it's United States bombs and bullets and planes that are killing people, and this is one of the shocking parts about the President of the United States making the gesture of going up and holding a Vietnamese baby in his arms to show how we love Vietnamese babies. We've been killing Vietnamese babies for 8 years, our government, because it thought that the interests of the United States were involved. And it's a little bit hypocritical at this late stage to hold babies in your arms. President Ford has been trying to keep the war going. He's still trying to keep the war going. And it's not because the Vietnamese people want to keep the war going. It's the United States that's paying for it.
Dr. Benjamin Spock, who was colloquially called the baby doc, I think, not necessarily to his face, but that's kind of the tag he had. But there he was. And he became one of the most high-profile anti-Vietnam War activists.
Yes.
And actually, if you still walk into the Unitarian Universalist Church in Eureka Springs, he spoke there at some point, and they still have a program framed on the wall from when he was there.
Oh, I did not know that.
All right, before we go on, you want to tease again, don't you?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Okay. So you're not going to tell us yet what we just heard.
No, but that's another hint.
Okay.
So they can't believe that it happened, and there's a plane involved.
Okay. All right.
So we're saving that for the end.
All right. One of my favorite Arkansas-connected historical figures you have up next.
Yes, Martha Mitchell of Pine Bluff,
who
came to fame during Watergate because she was married to Attorney General John Mitchell.
Right.
And she was quite a, what would you call her, a character, a figure that would, you know, admittedly have a couple of cocktails in the evening and call her reporter connections up in D.C. She would give them tips either that she had gotten from eavesdropping on her husband or going through his papers. I mean, she didn't care. She was really, like I say, a character.
You know, there is a fascinating podcast called Slow Burn, which is about Watergate. And
yes,
the first chapter,
I've heard it. It's great.
It is. And the first chapter is almost devoted entirely to Martha Mitchell. And what she was able to tell the press and how that advanced the investigations into Watergate. Now, the clip
you... something called a Martha Mitchell effect?
Yes, yes. Well, you know...
It's almost like gaslighting someone.
Right, and you know, she would say that she had been drugged because people in the Nixon administration didn't want her saying more, and they would isolate her in a hotel room. Now, the cut you have from the KATV archives that are being digitized by the Pryor Center, this is when she's already become a well-known national figure because by this time, Nixon has left the Oval Office. He's resigned the presidency.
Resigned.
Yeah.
And President Gerald Ford, as she called him, Jerry.
Yes.
Has already pardoned him. And so she was back in Arkansas to see some of her friends in Pine Bluff and was asked about that.
Do you think there was some kind of deal worked out in advance of the resignation?
I do indeed. I'm certain Mr. Ford wouldn't be in the White House. And I don't care if Jerry ever speaks to me again, but I'm sure that there was a deal worked out with Mr. Nixon before he left.
What would you recommend in this case? Did you want Mr. Nixon to be convicted or tried?
I hadn't come to a conclusion on that. I was waiting for public opinion to come around to a polarization. I don't know what the American people would like in a situation like this, but it's not fair for him to be given amnesty and the other people serve jail terms.
Do you expect amnesty to be granted to the other end?
Well, the way it looks now, no, unless American public opinion comes around to that.
What about the sense of timing, granting pardon before a man even goes to trial?
Well, that just shows his guilt.
What about rumors of his ill health and indebtedness since he's left office? Do you think that had a major was a major factor in the case?
Well, I think if Mr. Ford hadn't granted him pardon, they would have gone along with his illness as a means of escape.
Are you bitter at all about this?
Extremely so.
Would you expand on that a little bit?
I just don't think it's a great policy to set for this country when we've had the most tragic situation it's ever been in the history. And I just don't like the precedent that's been set.
Do you actually think, then, that President Nixon was guilty?
I've always more or less said that.
What do you think now that President Ford is president? Is the country going to right itself now? Do we have Watergate behind us?
We'll never have Watergate behind us, I hope, because in a way it's been good. We're teaching the politicians to be straight and not crooked.
Martha Mitchell from September 1974. So the president had, the resignation was about a month old, if not quite. And I love that you picked up, too, just Jerry, you know. That's
yeah,
how she
yeah.
went. Yeah.
Well, Jim Pitcock, my old boss from KATV, when all this was going on, went up to D.C. To interview her for ABC. It ran on the Huntley-Brinkley news broadcast, but he went to their apartment. They were living at the Watergate apartments. That's where she and John lived. And they were there in the afternoon, and she came out, as Jim says, in a robe. Looks like she had just gotten up, had her own personal makeup person, and just was as friendly as can be and was talking to Jim and the crew and was getting her makeup done. And the phone rang about 5 o'clock, and it was John. And he asked her, so have you done the interview yet? And she said, no, we hadn't gotten started. We're just having fun here talking. I just love these people from Arkansas. So, yeah, she was quite a character.
Another famous woman who eventually did live in Arkansas for a bit, I think, lived in Eureka Springs, had a theater there.
Yes.
Anita Bryant.
Yes. She was a former Miss Oklahoma, I believe, and became an outspoken opponent of gay rights.
Right.
In 77, she ran a campaign called Save Our Children and maintained that gay people were child molesters and child abusers, and was, you know, as a result, lost some popularity and some major endorsements. I don't know if you remember the
orange juice, right?
The Florida Citrus Commission.
Yeah.
You know, and she would sing Come to Florida. Come to the Florida Sunshine Tree. She ended up, you know, having all kinds of financial problems because her career declined. And part of that was a big show in Eureka Springs that she and her then husband kind of ran out of town on and owed a lot of people a lot of money. So I don't know how well liked she is in Eureka Springs, but during her popularity, and this would have been the bicentennial, so it would have been 76, there was a big celebration at War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock. It sold out. It filled the stadium. And she was the MC, and she talked about her Christian values.
A love of God and country was instilled in me in the public school system and in the home and in the church. And I think it's only natural that when you realize and have been to communist-oppressed countries like I have had opportunities to do, that it's only natural that you want to encourage more people to be patriotic. But It's like today I'm going to be sharing that that I pray that the spirit of 76 will be that we have a revived spirit with God himself. Because really it's not the world, not even America, that needs changing. It's people.
All right, you've teased us. Let's have the payoff.
Okay. Now. Yeah, this is my favorite part. Okay, so how should we do this? Let's play this clip.
Okay.
It's a little longer than the teaser, but that's about all we got out of it.
Tell us what happened.
Good, man.
If I could, I would, but I just don't believe it.
Hey, Jay, let me borrow your pay. Ron, I'll buy that hat from you. $2. Take it easy, man.
That's behind me. Okay. See you later.
I will admit that when you first sent these cuts over, Randy, I didn't look, I didn't cheat, and I listened to the teaser part, and I thought it was interesting, but I had no idea what it was referring to, but it will all make sense when you reveal this.
Yes. Okay, so let me give it away. If you read the first chapter of Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones autobiography, the first chapter is entirely about he and Ron Wood from the band being arrested in Fordyce, Arkansas in 1975.
And I mean, this is, I don't know if it's at the absolute zenith of the Stones' popularity, but it's very, very close.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had just done a 4th of July show in Memphis, and their next show was in Dallas. And Keith and Ron decided instead of taking the band plane, they would rent a car and drive from Memphis to Dallas, which ended up being, of course, a mistake.
And in case you're wondering, I mean, the Stones, like the Beatles and so many other British rockers, were fascinated by the legendary blues man that had come out of the Delta of Arkansas and Mississippi. So, you know, and Louis Jordan was from Fordyce, so there was great, significant musical heritage for them in that part of the state.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Keith even said he wanted to drive through Arkansas.
Yeah.
The guy who got them out of jail and arranged for a plane to pick them up was a guy named Bill Carter, who in himself is quite an interesting fellow that we can get into here in a minute, but the Channel 7 crew talked to him about the arrest and then being released.
The police observed the car swerving on the road, and Keith advised me that when he was pulling out from a restaurant, he leaned over to adjust the radio, and the car swerved, and the police stopped him as a result. The police have been very good to us here and have treated the group with respect and been very courteous to us. They were not placed in a jail cell. They were just detained in the office for a short period of time while the vehicle was searched.
Is it a normal procedure for the Stones to drive between concerts, especially through a rural area?
No, as a matter of fact, Keith Richards had indicated yesterday in Memphis that he'd never been in the state of Arkansas on all of his tours of the United States, and that he wanted to drive from Memphis to Dallas to sightsee and see the state of Arkansas.
You said there's more to the Bill Carter story?
Well, yeah. I mean, he's a fascinating person. He was born in Rector, Arkansas, was in the military, got his law degree, and then was a Secret Service agent for John F. Kennedy. He wasn't there in Dallas, but he did assist the Warren Commission. And the reason Channel 7 was the only crew down there, because it, you know, word spread around town pretty quickly. Several hundred people were outside the courthouse.
Well, you could hear that in that clip, yeah.
Yes, you can. People yelling, hey, let me buy that hat from you, Ron.
Yes.
Bill knew Jim Pitcock at Channel 7, and when he was called by the Stones, he got on the phone and called Jim at home and said, I think you need to have a TV crew down here. And so immediately there was a crew dispatched, and Channel 7 got the exclusive stuff.
Wow. all this information about the 60s and 70s, especially right now at the Pryor Center. These are archives from KATV. 1980 and closer to our time now, being digitized as we speak. They'll eventually get on the Pryor Center website. Just put in Pryor Center into a search engine and you'll find it.
Yes.
All right, Randy, this has been fun. Thank you.
Yeah. Can't wait for next week.
Nor can I.